Good day, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the MaxCyte Preliminary Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star and the number one on your telephone, and wait for your name to be announced. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded, Tuesday, the 20th of April, 2021. If you require any further assistance, please press star and zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to the first speaker for today, Mr. Doug Doffler. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, good morning and thank you, and good morning and good afternoon, everyone. First, I'd like to thank you for your continued interest and support of our team and MaxCyte and our pursuit of developing next-generation cell therapies. I'm Doug Doffler, the CEO of the company, and with me is Amanda Murphy, our Chief Financial Officer, who will be presenting later in the program this morning. So if I could, I believe you all have copies of the presentation. If I could ask you to move to slide 3, which is our introduction slide, and just to say that we just continue to expand the versatility and the applicability of our platform through new product introductions in the past year and also new applications by solving problems in the field of cell therapy and bioprocessing and drug discovery. It's a very, very strong trading year, both for our partners and our pipeline potential partners. We are broadening the set of applications for our technology and the indications that our partners are moving through and into the clinic. We have stated, it's quite good to see that our pipeline of potential partners continues to grow as our licensees grow. This last year, I think it was four new partners, including one in January. We've had a solid trading year, despite a very, very difficult market in with the pandemic. Our employees were not able to travel this year, and were not able to attend conferences. And despite that, we were able to post a very strong increase in revenue. And at the same time, we were able to reduce expenses, posting an EBITDA, a positive EBITDA for the company, which we're quite excited about. And many of you are aware of our corporate development activities and bringing in new investors, and we now have what we believe to be a robust cash position at the end of this year. So I can ask you all to move to slide 3. Slide 4. You're on slide 3. And we continue to build upon just an exceptional team at MaxCyte, and many of you have met most of the team at MaxCyte. But a couple, several new people who've joined. Amanda will be speaking soon. Many of you have met Amanda. Joined us after an excellent career as a cell site analyst with William Blair and BTIG, where she covered both tools and the cell therapy biotech companies, she has a really unique position and is helping us really leading our strategic effort as we think through what the next steps are for MaxCyte. Another recent addition is Steve Nardi as Vice President, actually Senior Vice President now of Manufacturing. Steve joined us, long career with companies such as Haemonetics, which is a large blood processing company, where he was responsible for scaling up the manufacture of both their instrumentation and their disposables. And that's going to be really critical for us as we continue to grow this business. And more importantly, as we move into supporting our partners' commercial therapeutic launches, where we need to be very flexible and really planning how we can support those customers in the long term as they launch these therapeutics. And then a most recent addition was Kevin Gutshaw as Vice President of Corporate Development. Kevin joined us from EMD Sigma Millipore, the rather large company that is a major force in the tools industry, and he's brought to the company some really interesting insights in both the cell therapy market, the drug discovery market, and in the bioprocessing market. Slide 5, a little reminder about the platform. This is a premier platform for non-viral cell engineering. It's based on our proprietary flow electroporation technology, and it's a high-performance system. It's very flexible for our customers. It's completely scalable, and it's of the highest quality possible. And what this does, it really does create we call it a transformative method for universally delivering molecules into cell, virtually any molecule into any cell at any scale. And we've been able to show this consistently with our partners, and one of the aspects of our partnerships, which you're going to see in a few minutes, is the breadth of their applications, the indication that they're going after, which does in large part reflect what's going on in the overall cell therapy industry. So this is becoming a major and important tool for companies who are moving into developing non-viral engineered cells. And it's clear from our perspective that these cells are becoming more complex over time, and the requirements for engineering are increasing over time. But at the same time, we have a continual issue with patient access and making sure that we can create these drugs in short periods of time to treat patients, but also at a price point that our healthcare systems globally can support and afford for the patients. The next slide is a slide that lays out slide six, the two markets that we operate in. On the left hand side, the purple side, is where we sell the instruments, the STX and the ATX, into the drug discovery and development industry. So this would be for protein production as well as small molecule discovery. And although they continue to change on an annual basis, we still have 20 of the top 25 big global pharmas by revenue, and all top 10 of these companies are using the MaxCyte technology. And again, that's a straight sale model. When we move into cell therapy space, where the cell is a drug, it's a different business model. It's a licensing model, and we've granted licenses now for well over 140 cell therapy programs. 100 of those are for license for clinical use. And the pre-commercial milestones of the 12 arrangements that we currently have with the leaders in the field, the milestones exceed $950 million, which is a nice, healthy increase over this time last year. So we're seeing growth in both segments, and I think very, very high growth in the cell therapy side of our business. If we move again to cell therapy on slide seven, we do more than just provide instrumentation and disposables. As you know, we have a rather extensive field support group, which includes salespeople and an incredibly talented, interesting group of field application scientists, total about 25 people now total. We combine that with our internal R&D efforts in Gaithersburg, Maryland, as well as a global network of regulatory experts that work with our partners to move their programs in and through the clinic. And what that does for our partners, it enables them to accelerate their programs into and through the clinic. It definitely reduces their program risk and cuts their cash burn by not having to change platforms, if you will. And this allows them to get a faster path to key company milestones. That's good for our partners. That's good for us. And we work very tightly together to help these companies, again, move their programs into the clinic, build this clinical asset, which obviously returns quite a bit of value for not only the company and its shareholders, but also for patients. And this has resulted in what's on slide eight, which is, I think it's fair to say that we're the partner of choice for these complex non-viral cell engineering companies. We announced four, including one in early 2021, and we believe we have a leadership position in the clinic in moving these programs forward. The partners that you see at the bottom include really the who's who. Practically all the companies involved in non-viral cell engineering are partners of MaxCyte, And these companies are working in a broad area, as I mentioned. It really does reflect what's going on in the cell therapy space. So we have some companies working in oncology, some companies working in infectious diseases. We have companies working in inherited genetic diseases, monogenetic diseases such as sickle cell disease and beta thalassemia. They're also working in autologous therapies where the patient's own cells are being engineered and given back to the patient, and also in the area of allogeneic cell therapy, where these are either donor cells or cell lines that have been engineered for off-the-shelf, if you will, administration to patients. So we're quite proud of how this business has been building, and I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Amanda Murphy, who will direct us starting on page 9 in terms of what this means for the investors from a financial position. Amanda?
Thanks, Doug, and good morning or good afternoon to everyone on the call. As Doug said, we've continued to add strategic partners, which we're very fortunate to do, and in aggregate, those partnerships, as many of you know, come along with pre-commercial milestone payments as well as sales-based payments for the majority of those partnerships. And the reason why that happens, of course, is because we, when you think about cell therapy, the cell is the drug, and so we are a primary part of that manufacturing process. And we also provide support to our customers through our sales and field application scientists, many of which have advanced degrees in cell engineering. And we also provide access to our FDA master file. So all of these things help our customers move through the clinic from sort of reducing regulatory risk, so to speak, and improving time to the clinic. So it's a very valuable partnership for both sides. In aggregate, we're now sitting at just above or above $950 million in terms of pre-commercial milestone payments from these partners. Of course, those are not risk-adjusted, but continuing to build over time. And then we would, on top of that, have sales-based payments as well as the license fees for our instrumentation and the ongoing PA usage, which we would expect to increase as our partners move along to the clinic and then into the commercial setting. If you move to slide 11, this will just give a quick overview of the highlights. I won't spend too much time here because we've already put out a lot of these numbers. We had a very strong year, particularly in light of COVID, reporting top-line growth of 21%. As Doug mentioned, we signed 4 additional customers. I'm counting the one that we signed early January as one that we signed in 2020. Obviously, there's a lot of work done in advance of that in 2020. We did have positive EBITDA before Karma, and that was really driven by, COVID-related reduction in expenses. Of course, many of us are not traveling, so something to keep in mind for 2021, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. And we ended, as Doug also mentioned, with pretty strong cash balance sheet with the recent financial raise in February, where we added about $55 million in gross proceeds. In terms of expectations for 2021, we expect strong growth in cell therapy. Our cell therapy business is doing very well. Of course, our customers continue to progress through the clinic, and we also are continuously adding new customers along the way. One comment we've made previously is that our strategic partnership pipeline, so the folks that were forming these partnerships where we're sharing in some of the program economics and providing incremental services, the pipeline for those programs is probably the largest we've seen. That continues to be the case, and maybe even more so the case than the last time we had this conversation. What's interesting about that pipeline is it's very diverse. We have all sorts of different applications in that pipeline, and so we continue just as a company to sort of mirror the diversity in the cell therapy pipeline in general. So whether that means the cell types that are being explored, whether folks are exploring autologous or patient-derived approaches or allogeneic or donor-derived approaches, we sort of are mirroring that diversity and even an indication, including in solid tumors. So we're happy to see that the willingness to partner with us going forward is still there. And again, one of the biggest partnerships pipelines that we've seen, and we have quite a good turnover rate there. Although some of those partnerships obviously can take some time to negotiate, since we are negotiating the terms up front. So bodes well for our growth over the next, several years, particularly with the program economics. One thing to mention on 2021, just a couple of points I wanted to highlight as we, think about how the revenue might trend. It does look like our milestone payments are going to be a bit more back and loaded. Obviously it's hard to predict what the FDA may or may not do. So just to give you that notice, not that they go away, but they are a bit back and loaded, so keep that in mind. Again, strong underlying growth, however, in the cell therapy business. And then from an EBITDA perspective, we had the positive numbers this year. We will have more expenses in 2021. We are assuming that, hopefully the world returns somewhat to normal. People continue to travel. Or start to travel, in the back half of this year. And we also are, as Doug mentioned, doing a bunch of investing, not just hiring folks, but, and Doug will talk about this shortly, but investing in some of our larger scale platforms, bringing those to commercialization. So we're bringing in resources there and just general investing. So keep that in mind as it relates to the EBITDA line. A couple other points I'd like to make before we move on. For KARMA, we have wrapped up the KARMA clinical activities, and we're aiming to have that published in a journal at some point. Obviously, hard to predict when that will be because the journals, of course, have to accept the publication. So just to throw that out there, I don't know that we have a specific idea of timing, but that is the goal of the KARMA program, and we'll continue to look to out-license that KARMA in terms of IP. And then one last comment. We've previously talked about the listing on the NASDAQ. We unfortunately aren't able to talk about this on that call, so I just wanted to preempt that before we get any questions. We will be unable to talk about the NASDAQ listing. Think of some other questions other than that one. Slide 12, you've seen this slide, I think, many times, and we've also pointed to some of these numbers. Still a very high margin business, close to 90%. We've now got 400 placements, 400 instruments out there, continue to stay at that sort of 20 to 25% five-year CAGR of revenue and very high recurring revenue between the lease part of our instrument business as well as the disposable side of the business. So that gives us quite a bit of good visibility into the business, with, of course, the caveat that milestones are still, we're early in those coming through to the P&L, so there's still a bit of lumpiness there in terms of predicting how the FDA will decide and how that will fall. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Doug for slide 13 to wrap it up.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you very much, Amanda. So again, in 2020, a very strong 21% revenue growth. We continue to expand capabilities in new cells, new molecules, and also we're starting to make more investments in process development to help our partners be more successful when they're moving their programs in and through the clinic. Continue to build out our processing assemblies, which is the product that they actual cells go into that attach to our instrumentation. We talked about strategic partnerships, and as Amanda said and I said earlier, that we have quite a strong pipeline of new potential strategic partnerships in our pipeline, again, which reflects, I think, the very positive investments that are going into the cell therapy space and the kind of the breadth of indications that these companies are pursuing. And as Amanda also mentioned, we did conclude the wrap-up of the KARMA clinical programs, and so that's behind us. The technology has been absorbed into MaxCyte, and we're currently in the process of putting together the publication that Amanda spoke to, but also thinking through how best to license and leverage that investment for the future growth in the company. Looking ahead in 2021 and behind, strong top-line growth driven principally by cell therapy, continue to make investments in manufacturing, bringing processing assembly manufacturing in-house, really securing our supply chain. One thing that we clearly recognized and worked hard around the pandemic was ensuring that we had our supply chain in hand and taking as much risk as possible out of that so we can support our customers as they move and frankly, the industry as it expands. We also have a larger scale system called the VLX, which runs 10 times the cells of the STX and the GTX. The applications for this new product, which will be marketed sometime in 2021 under the banner of the Expert System, so it'll look and feel like that unit. It's currently in alpha trials, if you will, with a handful of customers in particular applications. And just a couple applications I'll talk about. One is this will be able to move our MaxCyte's technology into the production of viral vectors in vaccines and suspension cells versus adherent cells, and also for large-scale allogeneic cell therapy. So we're very excited about this new product and working to ensure that we can support its application in the industry. And then, as you can see by the cartoon at the bottom, we've tried to lay out the workflow, if you will, from incoming cells all the way through to the thaw and dosing of those cells to patients, and really thinking through what other technologies that we can bring into the company. Many of our customers and our partners have approached us, asking us to help them, find, secure, and integrate some of these technologies into our workflow, because I think we're a trusted supplier and a trusted partner. And so we're looking very carefully to identify those new technologies that we can add to what we do and provide more support for our customers and the cell therapy and drug discovery industry. So with that, I appreciate your time today. It's about 25 after the hour, and we'll now open up the lines for questions.
Thank you, sir. Once again, attendees, should you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star and 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for a name to be announced. Should you wish to cancel it, can you press the pound or hash key? Once again, to ask a question, please press star and 1. And so our first question comes from the line of Paul Cudden from Numis Securities. Paul, please go ahead. The line is now open.
Okay, good morning, team. Good afternoon. I've got two questions. First of all, just I think we spoke about it last time, the kind of business model proposition for the VLX platform. Any further thoughts on whether you're going to go down a capital sale or a more sort of instrument licensing and milestone type route? And then secondly, are you finding that some of the people you talk to about Karma and the mRNA platform are sort of coming back to you with a little bit more interest now, given some of the developments in the market with mRNA technology? Thank you.
Well, let me try to take both of those, Paul, and thanks for the questions. And then, Amanda, if you could chime in with any additional comments that you may have. We are part of the work that we do in the introduction of a new product, such as the VLX, is to really dig deep with voice of customers and understand what the potential purpose of the instrument is and what value it brings. And so, from that, we will then determine how best to, provide that value to our customers and to our shareholders. It's very difficult to do that when you're in an early stage of a manufacturing environment. As you move more toward the closer to the patient, then you can start to think through the, participating in more of the downstream economics of that program. We don't have an answer for that question at this point, Paul. And as we get closer to the launch of that product, we will be, providing that guidance to to the street and the city. In terms of karma and mRNA, you know, mRNA was something that many people didn't even know existed a few years ago, and now it's sort of headline news. And yes, there's what we're seeing is quite a bit of investment going into the whole mRNA industry. And one of the things that I think held that back was that there wasn't adequate supply of material, cGMP material, of messenger RNA to actually support clinical development. And just maybe 3 or 4 years ago, there might have been 3 or 4 manufacturers globally of these of this type of product. Now, obviously, there are more people manufacturing it in large scale for global distribution, but you're also seeing a lot of new techniques for manufacturing to reduce cost and to ensure that these mRNAs are more stable and can translate more protein. So we're seeing I think not only a public interest in mRNA, but also interest in being able to build this as the, I think, a next generation, if you will, reagent for the industry.
And Doug, just on that, would you be able to license out an mRNA per target approach, almost in the same way that you license the expert out to kind of customers?
What's possible? I mean, clearly we have the intellectual property and we have the processes that we've developed that incorporate messenger RNA. So I think we're quite well suited for moving that forward. I mean, I think it's clear that a major part of the decision that we made around the KARMA program was not about the KARMA. It was more around not continuing to become a biotech high risk large investment clinical company. That was the major emphasis of us moving away from continuing the clinical investments in KARMA. We will, however, continue at a much lower scale in terms of investment, but nonetheless continue to improve the process that we develop and continue to prosecute the intellectual property that we gain from our early work in the mRNA area.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Your next question comes from the line of Julie Simmons from Panmure Gordon. Please go ahead, Julie. Line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, Doug. Hi, Amanda. Couple of questions. I suppose, firstly, just following on with the VLX, I was just wondering whether the sort of timing of investment now is just to do with you can afford it or whether it's due to a particular interest driven by customer demand. I mean, is that what's changed in that the sector has moved on and wants higher volumes, or is it just that you're able to progress with the device now? Because, I mean, you've had it for some time.
It's clearly the latter. This has been something we've been working on for quite some time, and we did when we launched the Expert platform about a year, maybe 2 years ago, I think around this time. I think it was March in 2019. And we've learned a lot about that program, that interface with customers, and it literally has taken us some time to try to figure out how to adapt the VLX, which is 10 times bigger. It's a much more robust system in terms of the volumes that it runs, into being able to integrate that into the Expert platform. So it was more that, and also I think you're seeing the applications for that technology starting to become more evident. For instance, the whole idea of being able to produce vaccines or viral vectors in suspension cells continues to be, if you will, kind of the holy grail of manufacturing in that sector. And you're also seeing the development now of the allogeneic cell therapy sector, and with that comes the interest in being able to do this on a large scale. You know, when you're starting in cell therapy, starting in allogeneic, the scale of production tend to be quite small because you're trying to illustrate a concept, if you will, prove a concept, and since many of those are starting to be proven. Now they're thinking about, okay, how do I actually commercialize this technology? And that's so. I think it's more around the market becoming mature enough that we can support the launch of the product. Very, very much the way that we've been waiting for a long time for the market to mature around the GTX and the SDX. And so, I think this is again, MaxCyte thinking, you know, pretty forward thinking about what's going to be required in the industry, and then the industry, you know, maturing to a point where, you know, we can make an interesting business out of it.
Excellent, thank you. And just on the sort of effect of the pandemic last year, clearly there weren't any conferences going on, so you couldn't sort of get your sales team out to meet customers face to face. I mean, clearly this time last year you had lots of leads from the conferences that had been going on face to face. I mean, how's that sort of early stage pipeline looking? I mean, did the sort of move to virtual conferences affect how the sort of the early leads are being kept?
Yeah, I think that we continue to build that, and my sense is that there's a vacuum in the industry in terms of these digital meetings. They're calling them digital meetings, and we were investing as much as we thought would be appropriate to participate in those. We're seeing the organizers now really come up with hybrid meetings where if they're able to have any attendees, they are also going to have this digital element of the program. So anything that we built or the industry built in the last year to create a digital meeting place, not only for business development but for transfer of information and bringing in leads and interest, that's going to continue. So I actually think that what you're going to see in the near future is as these conferences come back online, you're going to have a more fulsome interaction with the participants, not only, you know, bumping into each other in the hallway, but also, you know, doing it through social media and digitally, which I think, as we all know, in the field of business development and clearly in corporate and investing, you know, these digital platforms tend to make your day a bit more efficient than having to travel. So I do see that this is becoming another part of what we're trying to do. Just to put a fine point on it, you know, we were investing again toward the middle of last year and into the end of last year into these digital platforms to really bring in, you know, more leads so that we could build our pipeline. So I think it's I can't say it didn't affect it negatively. It did, but at the same time, I think our team was very creative and working on new ways for us to have these customers communicate with us. Sorry for the long answer.
That's fabulous. And just finally, I spotted the sort of arrangement between your partners, well, your partner CRISPR and Vertex has changed slightly to Vertex taking on the sort of manufacturing and commercialization of CTX001. I just wonder whether that would have any effect on your relationship with CRISPR or how that affects you at all.
Let me start off, and then Amanda can. We just saw that news this morning, as you all did. There was a shift in the control and economics of that. As far as we're aware, that won't have any impact on what we're doing. That program is doing quite well, and as you can see by the value that was ascribed to it, the change in control, it's considered a very valuable asset within the Vertex CRISPR family, and we're clearly a major part of that enablement. Anything to add, Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the news just came out, so we're all processing it at the same time. I think what Doug said is accurate in that we believe that, that thus far anyway, that it doesn't affect our relationship in terms of the economics. Obviously, we're still working through it, so we'll, you know, inform the market if anything changes, but that's our assumption for now. You know, that as long as CRISPR retains, you know, some element of economics there, the economics for the programs would remain the same.
Lovely. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Frank Gregory from Trinity Delta. Please go ahead, Frank.
Thank you. Good morning, both. Can I take you onto your balance sheet? You mentioned it's robust. You've got north of $80 million on there. Can I ask for a little bit of detail on what that use of funds will be, in particular what will be spent organically and on what? And on slide 13, you mentioned about bringing in new technologies, for complementary technologies, would they be licensed or would that be acquisitions?
Amanda, you want to take that?
Yeah, so obviously $80 million is great. And, you know, we're happy to have, you know, the investor confidence to provide us with that capital. I think there's a number of places that we're looking to invest, you know, one of which, of course, is to be able to support our customers as they move more commercial. So we're doing some sort of automation efforts internally to make sure that we're able to scale up, you know, as our customers scale up into commercial into commercialization. We are continuing to, you know, do the standard investment from a R&D perspective. So one of the drivers of growth for 2020 was some of our new single-use disposables. And so we're continuing to introduce things like that under the expert product line. And, you know, we've talked about the VLX, and, you know, we see quite a lot of opportunity there for large-scale applications. And so we're working on that platform, both from a, you know, bringing in resources as well as just, you know, sort of putting that platform under the expert umbrella, so to speak. In terms of the comments around partnerships and M&A, you know, I would say, stay tuned there. I think that's a longer term goal. I guess the way I describe it is, I think for cell therapy and the manufacturing supply chain, it's still pretty nascent, right, in terms of its development. And MaxCyte has enabled the scale-up of especially more sort of next-generation cell therapies that require more engineering. And so simply just harder to make with other technologies. And we also have a sizable commercial infrastructure with our sales team and our FASs. So there's a lot of technologies that are coming down the pipeline that, whether it be through high throughput mechanisms or better science, to speak to the, you know, the ultimate goal of trying to deliver these medicines to patients faster, make them more efficacious. So, you know, that's an opportunity we see, but obviously, we look to continue to partner with investors that can provide growth capital over time.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on the telephone keypad. The next question comes from the line of Lala Gregorek from Trinity Delta. Please go ahead, Lala.
Hi, Doug, Amanda. I'm just sort of picking up a couple of the themes that you were talking about, you know, the rapid scientific progress coupled with the sort of the maturation of parts of the sector. So looking at it in a sort of bigger picture kind of way, which of the potential opportunities in relation to engineered cell therapies are the ones that you're sort of most excited about in the sort of near to mid-term? And how do you see yourselves as being sort of positioned to sort of benefit from both the sort of the novel progress and also the maturation of the earlier waves?
Let me take a crack at that first. When we think of maturation, I think in this industry, I think it's you know, this is, I think we're still in the toddler phase, frankly. You know, we're seeing these companies who are, you know, taking these new concepts into the clinic and proving them out. And once these concepts have been, you know, proven to some extent, then I think you're going to see more and more drugs that are based on that same concept, would that either be a target or it be a certain kind of molecule or a certain kind of cell, meaning a T cell, a gamma delta cell, or an NK cell. So, you know, as these concepts become more valuable, I think you're going to see a lot more, you know, product coming in. So all those that we're involved with, obviously with our platform, that would bode well for how we're positioned as a company. So we're excited about, you know, moving these concepts forward, showing the clinical data with our partners or our partners showing the clinical data and eventually commercializing. I think what's also quite exciting for us is the new applications that we're seeing that are kind of being spawned from either translational academic centers or from, you know, new companies themselves. And these are with variations of cells, combination of cells, which we're starting to see. And we're also starting to see rather complex cellular engineering where you have multiplexing. So you're not only just adding in a CAR or a TCR, but you're also knocking down a particular pathway, maybe a PD-1 or something like that. So, you know, we're seeing kind of a two things. One is the concepts being proven out in these early stages, and they're quite broad, along with some really new and novel and interesting applications. And what I think we're feeling quite strong about our position in being able to support all those different approaches, and I think that's what makes MaxCyte really a unique company, because we can play across the entire sector and enable the entire sector like no other technology, I believe, can do.
Wonderful. Thanks. That's really helpful. Yeah, maybe just one thing to add on to that, and we said this earlier, but it is interesting to see, and we've specifically mapped this, our current customers and the diversity and applications that they're pursuing, whether it be, solid tumors, heme cancers, et cetera. We still see that in our pipeline as well. So our pipeline and current customer base really does reflect the diversity that we see in the cell therapy market more broadly. So just to make that point that, we're obviously excited about a lot of these therapies and particularly some of the interesting strategies coming forth in solid tumors. So just add that point.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue. No further question at this time. Please continue.
Doug, do you want to wrap it up?
Oh, sorry. Okay, so again, thank you all for your interest in what we're doing at MaxCyte. Again, a very exciting 2020, a lot of excellent accomplishments from our team. Amen and I stand on the shoulders of 65 of us around the world that are, supporting the growth of MaxCyte and doing our best to help make better medicines for patients through the engineering of cells. So thank you for your interest, and we look forward to continuing to update you on our progress through the year and into 2022. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This concludes our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. Speakers, please stand by. Participants, you may all disconnect. Thank you all for joining. Stay safe, everyone.